Pete's got a custom mic over there.
Hello, and welcome to the Mortgage and Real Estate Podcast by Pinnacle. I'm Chris Giannino, and I'm joined today with my brother, Pete Giannino. We also have a very special guest today, Alex Perez of Perez and Garavaglia team. They are real estate investments with Marcus and Millichamp. Alex, he's a friend I've known since high school. And when I knew Alex in high school, it was always clear to me that Alex will do just fine in life, to say the least. Magnetic personality, husband, dad, college wrestler, many more accolades, but just a great all-around guy. Alex, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you here. We know you're a busy guy. You guys, I mean, you and your team, top 10 real estate commercial in the country, putting up some fantastic numbers. And really, it's just a testament to you because you're a go-getter and just make things happen. So thanks for joining
us. Thanks. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So, I mean, we talked a little bit before when you got here, and just a lot of I haven't seen you in a while. I've seen you here and there since high school. But after that, I know you've moved around and came back to St. Louis to have your, this is where your family's from.
Right.
And this is where you started your family. So can you give us like just just the rundown on how you got, I like to hear it almost like after high school, where you went.
Sure.
Just, you know, give us the breakdown and then we'll just take it from there.
Yeah. So, after high school, I did my rounds at a couple schools, did a little bit of time at Merrimack, went over and wrestled at Missouri Baptist University. They started an inaugural, wrestling team and, called some of us guys that didn't go anywhere to wrestle. And so I went over there and did that. And I didn't end up graduating from there, but I'm glad I went because that's where I met my wife.
Nice.
So, you know, it was fun to wrestle. I met my wife, met some great friends, my coach Tom Smith, who was a mentor to me and I'm still close to, and a lot of my really close friends from my wrestling team. So it was a great experience.
At college wrestlers, I mean,
it was insane.
I mean, I wrestled freshman year at high school.
Yeah.
And it was unbelievable. I said, anybody who wrestles in colleges is just a different breed.
Like, it was insane. I mean, we weren't even like a big D1 school or anything. I mean, we were like an NAIA school, but it was wake up at 4:30 in the morning. You're out there at 5 to run 6-7 miles. Then you're doing live wrestling drills. Then you're going to class. You're back at the gym at 3 o'clock for weightlifting and sprints and more wrestling. And then you try
you're
to
an
go,
animal.
Yeah, right. And you try to go out at night then, you know?
Oh, of course. I'm sure you squeezed it in.
We did. you know, so it was absolutely insane. But I couldn't do that for more than a couple of years. it was just brutal.
Even that alone, I mean, there's a lot to talk about. But just that alone is something that stays with you.
It does. It does. I mean, when I tell younger guys or junior guys on our team, like, to do it this way and, like, to be regimented about it, there's just certain things that, like, when you know if you don't get up at 4:30 and you're not in the gym door, like, fully dressed out at 5 o'clock, like, you know what's going to happen to you. Like, there's just something in the back of your head that says, listen, you better get on the phones, right? Even in business, like, you better get on the phones because maybe Coach Smith isn't waiting there or Coach Gino isn't waiting behind you. Somebody else is, right? And, you know, it might be the bills that are coming that you're not going to pay, right?
Yeah, 100%. You got to take action. Yeah, continue. Yeah.
So I eventually ended up transferring to St. Louis University. That's where my mom and dad went, and I wanted to graduate from there. So I ended up going there and had a great experience. Went there with one of my best friends, Pat Wood from Wood Brothers Realty, and I.
Oh, yeah.
Had a lot
just
of classes.
The other day.
Yeah, great guy. And a lot of other friends there from high school. You know, we stuck around in St. Louis, but graduated from there. Ended up going out into the workforce, then going back and getting my MBA. I got that at Missouri Baptist. My wrestling coach ended up giving me a great financial deal to get that, so because we're close. And so I got my MBA. But, you know, in between there, I came out of school, went to work at Worldwide Technologies. I wanted to work for Edward Jones, but they kept telling me I was too young and you needed experience and blah, blah, blah. So I applied there literally like 7 times in the course of a year, before I graduated from St. Louis University, I was applying there already. And then while I was working at Worldwide, so I worked at Worldwide for like maybe 4 or 5 months until Edward Jones finally said, geez, this guy's not leaving us alone. So they hired me. They gave me an opportunity to come over, went out knocking on doors. Like, you see the Edward Jones guys selling mm-hmm. tax-free bonds. Interest rates were kind of like where they are now. I was selling tax-free AAA municipal bonds at like 5.5%. So they're actually a little bit higher than they are now, I think. That was a great foray into just really learning how to ask people tough financial questions and not be scared to mm-hmm. to ask them, you know, and ask for the business, right? They gave us a card at Edward Jones that had these 5 selling principles, and the 5th one was always ask for the business. And I've never forgotten
the power
that.
Of asking.
It's asking. If you will not receive if you don't ask. I went over to Merrill Lynch, did that for a little bit of time, and my dad retired from being a surgeon and went into venture capital, and I always liked that private equity venture capital realm. So I wanted to work in investment banking. At that time, A.G. Edwards had just gotten acquired by Wachovia. Edward Jones was really the only investment banking game in town, and since I had just left there to go to Merrill Lynch, there wasn't really any going back there. So I had to move out of St. Louis to take a job with a firm called Houlihan Smith, which was a subsidiary of Houlihan Lokey, which is the largest middle market investment bank in the country. And that was run by a guy named Charles Botchway, who to this day is a mentor of mine. He now has transitioned that company into Madison Street Capital. They get M&A Deal of the Year award quite a few years in a row. But he really taught me some key things that have built my current success in real estate. So I went in there, and I remember the first day people said, watch out for Charles and a couple of these other guys. Like, you're going to get your script on the phone, and you better memorize that your first day, because mm-hmm. you could be talking to a whale on the phone. It could be a huge commission, and if you skip one word on your script or you get it out of order, they'll walk by and they'll hang up the phone. And I saw it happen. It happened to me. You mess it up more than once, they send you home for the day. You had to get 5 leads a week to get your base, okay? To get your base salary. If you didn't
get 5...
And
what's a lead?
A lead is... I call Chris Giannino with Pinnacle Real Estate Advisors, and I'd say, hey, Chris, I understand you're looking to raise money. If you told me no, I'd say, oh, that's right. You know what? I have my information mixed up. Looks like you were looking to sell the business. And you're like, yeah. How'd you know? I mean, this is a cold call, right?
Right.
But it's like, oh, you know, we have our sources. We don't really like to divulge them right now. You know, when we get later on in the process, I can tell you who I spoke with, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, we'd go through that.
Right.
Once I got Chris Giannino to agree to meet with a senior advisor, and we would have about an hour long conversation as to what you were looking to do, I would secure you paying basically like a $4,000 retainer at the time. And I would secure Pete to go in and meet with you, fly him in the next day to Tampa. If you were in Tampa, fly him in, the regional sales director, into Tampa. He'd sit down with you for like 2 days and he would tear through your business and figure out what was, mm-hmm. what was wrong, where the pain was, where you needed help. Right. And then we would figure out if we could help you, if we could raise money or we could sell the business, whatever you were looking to do, right? That's a lead. And it's not easy to get 5 of those a week, right? So if you got sent home on Tuesday or Thursday and you only had 3 leads, there is a pretty good chance you were not getting paid that week.
How many calls a day were you making?
250, 300 calls a day. I mean, you have no idea the amount of people that just hang up on you, gatekeepers. Even you get Chris Giannino on the phone and he's like, hey, who are you calling me? Just hang up the phone. So a lot of outgoing calls, more outgoing calls than we have to do in real estate.
And you got
to
be careful on who you're spending time with. You don't want to cut anybody short.
Right. But there's guys that just want to talk to you. There's guys that just want to chat 100%. With you. They're older guys. They just feel like they want to chat.
It's between Edward Jones. Well, first of all, you have a, you know, prominent family, and you've learned a lot probably just through your family, your dad, your uncles, all that. But when you go in the sales field, between Edward Jones door knocking and that job with 250, 300 calls, I mean, that is sales school to the fullest. Anybody who can move on in life and have a very prosperous sales career has went through some level of that to varying degrees. But when you do that, you have, after you do that for a certain amount of years and you actually have success with it, you have immense confidence. And you could tell other people to do this because you did it.
Right. Absolutely. You know? Yeah.
So you take that job. You have some success with that, yeah. It sounds like.
Yeah, so I had success with that. That happened right as I was building my success in the investment banking industry. We had the great financial crisis of 2008, right? And so things really dried up. I had to figure out what to do.
And what state are you in at
I'm
this
in
point?
Chicago at this point.
Okay.
Living in Chicago, downtown, the Gold Coast. Tiny apartment, but like walking distance to
single
my office.
Single guy?
No, I was married.
You're married, okay.
I was married. It was great. It was a fun place to live. You know, the winters were bad, but everything else was fun. Everything dried up. It was done.
Mm-hmm.
Investment banking. Like, if you didn't have a couple million dollars set aside, like, you're going to have to really alter your lifestyle because, like, the paychecks weren't coming in for a while. So I was looking for something else to do. And there was a spinal implant company that my dad's venture capital fund was a lead investor in. And I had helped out with raising some money and introducing some people. And so I called the CEO, who was a doctor, who started that spinal implant company. And I said, look, I'm looking for something to do. You know I'm good at sales. You know I can do what I say I can do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have that I could do for you? And I think he was impressed, you know, by the phone call. I had a relationship through my family's fund with him. And so he said, hey, we just lost our guys in Miami. You want to move to Miami? I said, I'll be down there next week. So I packed up my wife and we moved down to Miami. And I was down there for, you know, a couple years, built up the business. They were really having difficulties getting into... I speak a fair amount of Spanish. You know, I'm not totally 100% fluent, but I speak enough to get by and to get in and talk to people. And so I got us into a lot of hospitals. I mean, in Miami, English is a second language, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of places like Hialeah and Miami Gardens and all these little places surrounding Miami. It's not just Miami Beach and downtown Miami. There's a lot of suburbs down there. And a lot of those suburbs, if you don't speak Spanish, Coral Gables even, which is an affluent suburb where University of Miami is, if you go to Publix, like, you don't speak Spanish, like, cashiers are going to get pissed at you, right? So I got us into a lot of hospitals.
I just experienced it.
You did?
Last week.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wasn't that far down, but I mean, just in the Winn-Dixies.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I got us into a whole bunch of hospitals down there, made extremely close inroads with a surgeon at University of Miami, who helped me get into University of Miami healthcare system and Jackson Memorial, which is a massive healthcare system. It's like Barnes. And just really did well. The company made a lot of money. I was distributing a lot of spinal implants and biologics and different things down there.
What was the time frame that you were doing that? Like, how long were you there?
So that was like until from like 08, like the financial crisis hit in 08. So somewhere around in there through 2010.
Gotcha.
And then I wanted to be closer to my family. I've always been a close guy to my family, like I know you guys are. And so I wanted to move back to St. Louis. So I kind of kept that going on autopilot down there with some sales reps, moved back to St. Louis. Met a guy here through a friend of mine who's a spine surgeon who had a spinal implant company that I went and worked with distributing and selling his stuff while I was doing the other stuff. And I had an opportunity in 2014 to exit my distribution business at a point where I was at a point in my life financially where if I didn't get paid for a couple of years while I was trying something new, I would be okay, mm-hmm. right? And so, as I was telling you earlier, I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I didn't love the medical business. You know, I grew up like all the doctors I knew them on a first name basis, right? Because my dad's a doctor, my uncle's a doctor, all our family friends were doctors. When I started out in business, I was a financial advisor. So I was like calling you or a doctor, and I wasn't calling Dr. Giannino. I was like, hey, Chris. I was like, I got this tax-free bond. You know, it's 5.5%. If you have $50,000 available, you should buy some today. And so I was advising them. We were peers.
Mm-hmm.
Then I moved into this role where I was the sales rep to them, and I was like not that different than a drug rep. And so I was like, hey, Dr. Gene, you know, you mind if I get 5 minutes of your time?
Right. It didn't feel right.
Yeah, it didn't feel right, especially, you know, when you got a little bit of an ego, right, from just who you are and what you'd done before. Like, I didn't love it, but it was feeding my family, and so I did it. And it just wasn't what I wanted to do long term. So I was trying to figure something else out to do when I exited that. And I had met a guy in maybe 5 years before this on a party bus for my friend's 30th birthday party. And he was married to my friend's wife's friend. They went to WashU Law School together.
Okay.
And this dude was really successful guy in real estate. I got on his email distribution list, and I used to get his just listed and just closed deals. Like, I think you probably get some of mine. And, I remember,
and they're great. They're effective.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate that. And I remember laying in bed one night, trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I got this just closed. It was like a $6 million Winn-Dixie in Jacksonville, Florida. I remember,
and at this point you're trying to figure out what you want to do.
Exactly.
Right.
And I get this listing, or this just closed, and it's $6 million in Jacksonville, Florida. And I remember just kind of doing a quick calculation. I looked over my wife, and I'm like, you know, I bet this guy made $300,000 from this deal.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah. She's like, that's a lot of money. And I was like, you know, he's closing like 20 or 30 of these a year. I was like, this guy's making a lot of money. And I was like, I could be good at this. And she's like, yeah, you probably could. And I was like, yeah. I was like, but, you know, I used to watch Million Dollar Listing with her, and I always used to say, hey, if I could start over and I didn't have any responsibilities, I would do that because I'd be really good at that. And she used to say, yeah, I bet you would. And so my wife's very risk adverse. I mean, she does not like to take risks. Mm-hmm. I'm the risk taker, right? And she is not. And I said, you know, there's no salary. You know, it's a whole new business. Like, if I was in my 20s, because I'm 34 at the time, I said, if I was in my 20s, like, maybe I'd do this. And she just looks at me and she goes, you should call him.
Well, once you get the green light from her,
oh,
it's automatic.
I got that green light. It was like, she goes, you should call him. So I actually said, I'm not waiting until tomorrow to call him. So I texted him like 2 minutes later, and he texted me back, hey, come in tomorrow and let's talk. Now, when I was about 5 years prior to this, and I really hated what I was doing in medical sales, I had asked him, hey, what would it take for me to get into this? And at that kind of, he kind of shut the conversation down on the party bus. Like, hey, I'm not looking for a partner. You really got to know what you're doing to get into this. It's very complex and you got to have relationships. And I just thought, okay, I mean, I missed the boat on this one. I'll find something else to do. And when he said, come in tomorrow, I mean, I was ready to rock and roll. I went in there, suited up, ready to talk. I pitched myself. It was a great meeting. Met with his higher up, and like within a week, they were like, hey, we want you to start. And
where is this at?
This was at Marcus and Millichap here in St. Louis, in Clayton.
Yeah. It's amazing that you say that, because when you were talking earlier about the phone calls that you were making for the investments originally, and you know, you make 250, 300 phone calls, and some, and you said sometimes people are interested in, are you interested in investing? They say no. Then you say, oh, you're interested in selling.
Right.
And then they say, oh yeah, okay. And then same thing in this real estate thing where you were looking for something to do. You talked to the guy at one point and it wasn't looking for anybody. You talked to him again. He's looking for somebody. It's just consistency, persistence, and preparation. When the preparation meets the opportunity, things happen. And that's how it goes. It's always about the timing. It's always about the timing, and
it's
the timing's
timing.
Not right unless you continue to be persistent.
If you're not always in the background, when the timing's right, somebody else is going to be in the background.
Yeah, and I don't know what to take away from these first 15 minutes. I mean, whether it's the work you put in, getting up early and knowing what the coach expected from you at the wrestling, or the persistence of constantly calling your clients and making sure that your habits were good, or taking a risk and because you wanted to do something that you thought you would be good at and you recognized it and just said, screw it, I can do this. I mean, there is so much packed into what led you to where you are today. I mean, you could, you know, you, you might need to write a self-help.
So what happened? So
well, there's
that
been
point,
a lot of self-help in there. You know, there's been a lot of roadblocks, you know, personal, you know, I mean, like there's been a lot of stuff, you know, it's
what self-help is, right? Like it's not just describing the things I did right.
Right.
But describing the obstacles that I encountered and then what I did to deal with them.
Yeah.
Even when things were bad.
Yeah.
You know,
absolutely. So,
you got to have a fair amount of self-sabotage too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's part of it.
No
question. If you don't do that, then you don't have a real story.
Right.
You know,
right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so yeah, there's been a lot of that. So yeah.
100%, 100%, as we all do. So you take that job and, when did you begin to have success with that?
Yeah, so it was like, look, I attribute a lot of stuff to God too, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like I've got a deep faith in God, and I feel that He brought me to this opportunity and put the right people in front of me throughout my life to help me learn how to be the best at what I can be the best of what I do. And, you know, this job, I had immediate success. I went in my first day, like my fourth call, I ended up calling this guy. He's a Persian guy, really nice. I'm friends with him to this day, named Amir Minofar. Amir is out of Kansas City. He's an immigrant from Persia. A guy just did really well in different businesses and always was wise and invested in real estate. And he owned this little property called the Woods Supermarket Shopping Center in Sedalia, Missouri. Mm. And so it was a little shop. It was a little shopping center, like a grocery store, with inline shops, which are like, you know, the if you have a nail salon, a barber, those types of shops.
Yes.
Next to the Schnucks or whatever, right? And then in the outlot, which is in the parking lot, there was a Hardee's. So it was a nice deal. I mean, it was a nice deal. You had a single-tenant Hardee's. You had a grocery-anchored property. And it was like one of two grocers in town. So it was like, you either go here or there to buy groceries. So it's necessity retail, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, so I listed that my first day. So I got the guy on the phone.
You listed that your first day?
I listed
industry.
It my first day and, ended up closing on it 75 days later.
What was the list price and what was the commission?
The list price was $3,750,000 is what it sold at. It was like a $4 million deal, $3,750,000, and we had a 6% fee on it.
I mean, it's a great first day.
Good start.
It's a great first day.
What took you so long?
I don't know. And then the legend with my young guys at the office is, and this was like talking about being at the right place at the right time, because I could have been a year earlier and it would have been a totally different, mm-hmm. totally different reaction, 100%. Right? So I call a guy down in Birmingham, Alabama. This guy used to run one of the biggest privately held real estate investment trusts in the Southeast, Colonial Properties. His name's John Huey. He's a very close friend of mine. I mean, every time I go down to Birmingham to go look at property, I stay at his house. Like, mm-hmm. we've become very close personal friends. And I love the guy. I mean, he's helped me tremendously in my career. I ended up calling him about a really big shopping center. I mean, it's like something like if you're from St. Louis, like the Brentwood Promenade, like a big, we call them big box power centers. So, you know, you could have World Market, Walmart, Target. Those are big box stores. Then you got junior box stores, which could be like a Five Below or a Petco or a PetSmart. So this was like a 375,000 square foot power center right off 65 and 31. In fact, anybody that drives to Destin, Florida, you drive right by this. If you stop at Chick-fil-A in Alabaster, you've been to this shopping center, okay? And so I end up calling this guy, and he starts talking to me, and then he starts telling me he's not really a seller, and I start asking him why he's not a seller. Like, how do you know you're not a seller? We haven't talked about what I could get you for the property. And he's like, well, you know, we're a family office and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, well, what, you know, if you bought the property for a certain price and I can sell it at another price and you can trade into something with more opportunity, like, wouldn't that make sense? And so he starts listening. So I start engaging him. And he told me later in our relationship that he doesn't know why he stayed on the phone with me, because 100 guys from Marcus & Millichap call him a week, because there's a lot of Marcus & Millichap agents.
Okay? I know.
They call
the
everybody,
website,
right? They call everybody. So about half the people you call get pissed off right away. Marcus & Millichap calls me every day. I don't want to talk to you. And then you got to calm them down. Other guys really respect us because we're the largest real estate investment sales 100%. Firm in the country.
Your CEO all over
Hassam
the place.
Is awesome. And it's in terms of sales from deals from $2 to like $30 million, no one in the country sells more than us. There mm-hmm. are other bigger firms that manage and lease and stuff, but we only sell. So I keep this guy on the phone, and about halfway through our call, I felt like I might be losing him a little bit. And I said, John, I tell you what, I said, I'm going to get in my car right now and drive down to Birmingham, and I'm going to meet you for dinner. And he goes, oh, hold on. I can't meet today. He goes, but I could meet tomorrow. And I said, well, where should I meet you tomorrow? He said, well, Mr. Probst and I will meet you at Full Moon Barbecue at the shopping center tomorrow. I said, okay, I'll see you there. So I run in my partner's office at the time. I was like, hey, we're going to Birmingham tomorrow. And he's, okay, great. So Mr. Probst, the Probst family is an extraordinary family. He got in the pharmaceutical business in the 80s and 90s and ended up selling for, you know, mm-hmm. 9-10 figure or some, and ended up buying a lot of real estate. Well, I ended up getting in with them. John became an extremely close friend, great client, unbelievable referral source of mine. He will literally pick up the phone and call anybody in the country and talk to them on my behalf if I'm trying to list a deal. So that particular deal, we listed it for $52 million, okay? We had a very, very solid commission on it. And I found a buyer who was in a 1031 tax-deferred exchange, which is where he sold a property, and if he closes on another property within 180 days, he defers all his capital gains taxes. And I found out about a week into talking to him about the deal that he had not identified any other trade properties, and he had about 2 weeks left. And if that time period ran out, then the IRS says, okay, you owe us capital gains tax plus any depreciation along the way that you've taken on previous trade properties. So this guy was in big trouble, like if he didn't buy this property. So I smelled blood in the water.
How did you find him?
So through our email database. So we have a very comprehensive email database, and then we supplement it with other third-party platforms that we pay for. Every time we list a property, and we're very selective on who we list and make sure that the pricing's correct, because you know we have anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 or $7,000 between photographer and offering memorandum, these platforms that we use to make sure that we're exposing the property not just to our database of 50,000-60,000 people, and not just Marcus and Millichap's database, because everybody at Marcus and Millichap can send our deal out to somebody, but also to other people that may be a little more hidden.
Well, for the 1031 exchange, how did you find out that information? Was that something that you looked at part of the database, or did he just disclose that?
So we do as much due diligence on our buyers as they do on the deal. So when we find out your name, we start researching who you are. And we saw that he sold like probably a $40, $50 million Sam's in California. And this guy had just moved to Jacksonville from California. He's one of the biggest Sam's developers in the country. And he was in the midst of a trade. So, you know, we were asking him to tell us about the other properties that he was looking at buying in addition to ours. And he didn't really give us the right information as somebody would give you if they were actually looking at other properties. So we felt that he hadn't identified anything. And so we said to him, look, we had no other offers on this property. Okay. We told him that if he wanted to buy the property, he needed to put $2 million non-refundable day one on contract. We ended up getting more offers after that. But at that time,
of course,
it was a real posturing, right? He agreed to it. He put $2 million hard day one, which he could walk away from, but there's a very high likelihood that he's not going to walk away from $2 million. And he ended up getting retraded by his B-piece lender, which is the second lender, almost like if you're doing a double mortgage on a house, right? So this is a CMBS, collateralized mortgage-backed security lender, and they are notorious for retrading you on your rate like the day of closing. And they did that to him, but he didn't even come to us and ask us to adjust anything because he knew that we were not going to. And we got that deal closed at the price that we told the seller, and it was a seamless transaction. He became really good friends with the buyer, and it cemented a relationship for us that ended up paying dividends. I mean, we've sold a couple $100 million worth of property that this guy's been related to, whether through ownership or that they previously owned.
Well, at that point, if he's going to list the property, he wants you to list it.
Right. And then
he knows how you can find buyers.
Right. And that's what we do. And then, you know, we sold another $300 or $400 million worth of Alabama and Georgia property that he literally picked up the phone and said, "Hey, Chris, you really ought to list it with Alex and Chris. These guys know what they're doing."
Yeah, how could you not say that at that point?
It was great.
So he probably did well in that. He did well.
They did extremely well.
Right. That is that's great. I mean, there's a lot more to this. Like, it's not so much it's not real estate technically. It's all about, you know, the relationships and the trust that's built and breaking down barriers and having somebody say no on the phone and turning it into a yes. Just assuming it's not going to be a yes
right off the bat. There's a lot of no's.
Yeah.
There's a lot of no's from guys that you know, that know you, they like you, they know what you do, they know you do it well, and they still might say no. I mean, for example, during the pandemic, you know, everybody would kind of put their tail between their legs. A lot of guys in my industry, and they're like, "Oh, nobody's going to do anything, blah, blah, blah." Well, up to that point, we had our best year ever in 2020 because we constantly, every day, we checked in with every single person that we'd ever sold a property with or that we had called in the past. And there were a lot of people that had essential properties that no one was calling.
Mm-hmm.
And we listed them and sold them.
Focus, whatever you focus on, right? I mean, you could focus on how bad the industry is doing and how commercial real estate is down this percentage, or you could focus on the opportunities out there.
I told my young guys during the pandemic, and I told them the same thing now with interest rates. I told them during the pandemic that there's going to be a lot of guys that have been doing this business, especially after the pandemic in 2022, when everybody and their brother could sell anything. Okay. Mm-hmm. I told them it's real easy right now for people to sell stuff. I said, but when it gets hard, which it is now with interest rates, 2023 was a lot harder than 22. So there's going to be a lot of guys that thought they were real beasts out there selling a lot of stuff, and they're going to flunk out of the business. And there was a lot of mortgage guys, I'm sure you all know, that they were financing everybody and their sister. And during 2020 through 22, when the 10-year treasury was at like 0.8, right? They're not in the business anymore. Right. They're done. They're at the Olive Garden now, waiting tables. You know, you guys are still here. I'm still here. You know why? Because we know what we're doing. We put the time in. We've educated ourselves. We stay in contact with our clients and we do the right things. And that's what I try to express to all my juniors. And my partner tries to express it to our juniors, that if you just stay on it, and you're doing the right thing at the end of the day, people are going to keep coming back to you, and you're going to be the one standing when other guys flunk out.
Well, when you've done it and you have examples and you've already been through the 2008, the 2009s, then what you say has meaning.
Right.
You know, and you don't look back. You burn the ships. You're moving forward.
That's right.
You know, and you may deviate, pivot, but it does, you don't know you're going to pivot until it happens. Right. Then that's what you're doing, and that's all there is to it. You know, so I think that's just it. Yeah, it's not about real estate. It's about all the extra things that come with it. You had also mentioned about the database, and the database is huge. That is it's gold.
Yeah.
It's gold if it's utilized properly. When you talk about your personal database and you talk about the guys that you have working with you, what's the message for their database? We talked a little bit about it earlier.
So I tell them, like, there's really, you know, other than yourself and your personal relationships that you have with people that you're calling, there's nothing more important than a good database, because you can have the best deal in the world, and if nobody sees it, you know, you're not putting in commercial real estate, you're not putting a for sale sign out front of things, not general, unless you're leasing. Like, when you're selling it, a lot of times the buyer's coming from out of state, you know? So they've got to be able to see the property. Nobody's checking. Nobody even reads the newspaper anymore. I mean, not like they used to. So nobody's going in the real estate section of the newspaper looking for a shopping center. So you've got to have a really good database. And so our database consists of everybody I've ever known, everybody my partner's ever known, everybody we've ever called, everybody that's ever looked at one of our deals or called us about one of our deals. Anytime I call you about your property or you call me about my property, no matter how you got my name and number, I capture your info, your name, your phone number, your email. What do you own? What do you want to buy? What do you see yourself owning in the next 5 to 10 years? And all that stuff goes into our CRM, okay? And I tell all my junior guys, and my partner tells our junior guys, you got to capture everybody's info, because that one person that you don't capture their info, they could be the buyer of your next deal, right? And if they don't buy your deal, they might buy this other guy's deal, and now they've become his or her client for life, right? If they do a good job. So you got to harness this all.
Right. Yeah. They could also have the next opportunity for a new industry that you want to get into.
That's right.
It could be anything. If you keep that database, and it also makes no conversations that you had were for naught at that point. You know, they're in your database. And that's huge, because a lot of people don't think about all the conversations that they had throughout a day to put them in a database, or the people that they met to put them in a database. But if you do, after a couple of years go by, you have gold.
It's a pain to put it all in. Trust me. I mean, we can make double the amount of outgoing calls if you weren't taking time and inputting. It doesn't have to be, right? You're not a court stenographer that's putting the whole conversation in there, right?
No.
But you need to put, you know, I spoke with Chris Giannino. He owns XYZ Shopping Center. He said that he's not interested in selling now, but maybe interested in the future, and he is a buyer, and this is what he wants to buy.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have those in there. And then you also have to use technology. I'm 44. I just turned 44 in January. My guys make fun of me, even my partner Chris, who's a little bit younger than me, but with technology, they tell me I don't know anything about technology. My computer will freeze up and I'll start yelling for somebody to come in the office.
For sure.
All they do is turn my email on and off and it fixes itself, right?
I can relate.
Yeah, you know how it is. So, like, you know, utilizing like Microsoft Outlook and reminders and all these things, like, you know, I'm an ADD guy. So like, if I don't write it down, if it's not on a sticky note, like I don't remember. And if it's on a sticky note, there's a good chance I'm going to lose it. So like, it needs to go somewhere electronic. And my partner has really helped me to say, hey, you got to put this stuff in your calendar. You got to do this. And so that's trickled down to our young guys, because if you tell Chris, I'm calling you back, Chris, in 6 months to talk about this, because that's what you told me you wanted me to do, I'm not going to remember to call you in six months. I'm making, you know, at a minimum 60, 75 calls a day if I'm busy with other stuff. And on a good day, 100 plus calls a day for me. My young guys are making a lot more than that. And there's no way between managing your existing pipeline, your existing business that's already under contract or under LOI, and you're negotiating with people for PSAs, and you got a difficult buyer that's now trying to retrade a deal over some BS on a roof that's not bad. You know, there's a lot of stuff in your mind that you're trying to figure out. You're not going to remember to call this guy from 6 months ago today and what to talk to him about. So that all has to be detailed in your reminders.
Mm-hmm. Then you have a pipeline.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, we're here with Alex Perez, commercial real estate. Powerhouse, really. Yeah. and just in general, a business specialist who knows how to talk to people and get deals done. There's so many things. Like you said, a roof, you could spend all day. If you don't know how to manage your time properly, you could spend so much time on one issue. You need to be able to make decisions, act quickly, and then move on to the next and somehow clear your head of it.
Absolutely.
Which is difficult to do. That's the beauty of the calendar. Once it goes on the calendar for the next day or the following day, it's the release button. It allows you to eliminate that from your mind, because you know it's electronically going to pop up for you the next day. So a lot to be said about that. Pete, did you...
You know, you can't... can't help but be inspired and excited to get to work after this podcast.
100%. 100%.
I mean, polished speaker sharing valuable information. And really, this is intended to be a compliment, but this is not brain surgery in a way. You know, you're what you are speaking of are just things people are unwilling to do because it takes persistence, it takes developing habits, it takes some level of confidence that is absent in many cases. But if you stick to a lot of these things, it's, you know, the reason I think this is inspirational is because it's doable. In every business, it is. You're not saying things that are unachievable.
You know, my cousin, who you know, Rob.
Yeah,
he's extremely close friends with Andy Frisella.
Okay,
and Andy's an unbelievable guy. And
yeah, I just listened to him on was it Ed Milette's show?
Yeah, and look, I've seen Andy since we were in high school, and he went down to Southeast, and him and Chris started, you know, Big Boys Superstores, and they were a one room shop, you know,
sleeping on the couch,
yeah, doing that stuff, you know, in the back, and to where they are today. But you know, one thing Andy says that, you know, no matter how big and powerful you think he's gotten or somebody's gotten, his instructions are simple, right? It's do the right thing, do it every day, do it over and over, repeat it, hone your skills, and just get better every day. And like, that's another thing that Charles Botchway, my mentor from investment banking, like he said, you got to find your skills, you got to hone your skills, and you got to figure out how to use them. And once you know how to use them, you go in for the kill. And once you learn how to do that, nobody can stop you. Nobody.
Right. And you don't have to look for that either. You're just focused on what you're too busy focusing on where you're going. You're not looking around for the naysayers. Same thing with sports. You look at Messi, you look at all these great athletes. They're all practicing the same things, the cut move, scissors move, you know, whatever you want to do. But if they're mastering the simple things, you master the simple things and you do them consistently, then that's how you get really great.
Yeah, if you've honed your skills, then that's all the preparation, and that preparation breeds confidence, which turns into results.
Yeah, absolutely.
I got to deviate for a second because it reminded me of an experience I had yesterday. And yesterday, so I referee soccer, and I happen to be refereeing this team of 14-year-olds that and I'm related to one of them, and it's my nephew Christopher Jr.'s team, and I didn't even know I was reffing them, and that's the team that showed up, and they were dominating the game and doing the same thing over and over and over and could not score a goal, and this team was lacking some recent success, and not probably from playing poorly, but just, you know, the habits were not turning into results. And so I was watching this game, and they just kept doing the same thing at the same energy level the entire game. And they were the right things. They had the ball 80% of the time, but hit the post, you know, hit it over. But a lot of positive talk out there and a lot of repeat performance on the right things that just weren't resulting in a goal. It's an 80-minute game, and there's 2 to 3 minutes of stoppage. And in the 82nd or 83rd minute of the game, they scored a goal. And the game ended in 1-0 victory. And I thought to myself, yesterday, and it was reminded of it today, that if you just kind of can repeat, like you said, repeat doing what's right over and over, something good will happen.
That's right. 100%.
I told that to my nephew after the game. I said, you guys just stuck with it, and it paid off.
Oh, man, that was we needed that one as parents.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's probably you needed it more than the kids.
Oh, yeah, he's moving on.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so that's a great connection there. And I wanted to tell you, so a couple things on... You like cars.
I'm a big car guy. I'm a big car and watch guy. I love those things. Loved them since I was a kid.
Right. What cars do you have?
So right now I just have one. So I've got a 2023 BMW M5 Competition, which is just, I mean, I would have a super sports car, but I've got two kids I got to drop off at school every morning. But this thing, you know, it's fast. It's 0 to 60 in like 2.6 seconds. It's a beast.
From what I've seen, though, if you have the opportunity to get in a super sports car, you're going to take it and drive it.
Yeah, that's right. You see me driving around here lately?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's good. You got to feed.
Yeah. You probably see me in a couple of the Lamborghinis around here. So one of my like best friends has an exotic car dealership here in town, RP Exotics. And, him and I are just extremely close, and we help each other with business. And, so last week I was rolling around town in a matte black Aventador, with the SV package. And then the week before that I was in an orange Huracan. So he's an awesome guy, and he knows I love cars, and he knows as soon as the kids are big enough that, I'm coming to get one of these from him. So,
You're going to be in one, because I know, you know, whenever you assume the feeling of the wish fulfilled, that's what happens. Well, driving a car is one of those things where it's very easy to assume the feeling because you're literally in it and driving it. So you will have one of those.
Yeah, thanks. Just the way I appreciate it goes.
I was going to ask you on a residential side. I ask a lot of people this. So residentially, where do you live, and why did you pick that location, and why did you ultimately pick that house?
Yeah, so I live on the border of U-City and Old Town Clayton. Really cool, old, historic neighborhood. A lot of the houses are World's Fair-type houses. Mine's a little bit newer than that, but I love the feel of it. Big, old, wide streets, big trees. Not far from Forest Park. I'm less than a mile from my office in downtown Clayton. So before I drove the kids to St. Ambrose, it only took me like, 2.5 minutes to get to work. So, that was really quick. Now I drive down to Ambrose and back. We picked the area just because we love the urban feel. But we also like being not far from anything. And that area, you're like 10 minutes from everything.
Yeah. Certainly the central corridor, jewels, is Clayton, U-City, all that area. And then you're spending your time on the hill with your kids. I mean, you're doing things right way as far as St. Louis is
concerned. Yeah, it's great. We love it. We love the hill.
Yeah, St. Ambrose. So did you have to drop the kids off today?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
Oh, well, that was convenient.
Yeah.
Well, I loved reconnecting with you, Alex. Yeah, thank you very much for stopping by the Pinnacle headquarters here on Marconi, right? Two doors down from St. Ambrose.
Yeah,
there.
Convenient location.
Yeah, for sure. So let's do this again sometime for sure. Unbelievable content. I mean, we could go on for hours, because I would love to dive in on a lot of the details that you talked about I'm fascinated when it comes down to just the success that comes from getting a no, the success that comes from making 200, 300 calls, and being able to take rejection, but move forward until you get success. I mean, that is something that, you have to be cut out for to an extent, or you have to have a big enough why, And it sounds like, one of your major whys is your family. But I also think that you like the exciting chase of it, the deal, the close, and ultimately, and everybody ends up winning. I mean, the people are making money off the Chapel Plaza, of the plazas that are being sold. You're presenting these a lot of times, like you said, these people aren't, and that's sales in general, life in general. A lot of these people, you're presenting them with opportunities. They're not necessarily selling, but if you could present them with an opportunity on, hey, consider selling, taking this money, you could put it into this other plaza that I have for sale.
Absolutely.
So presenting opportunities that don't exist is the name of the game, and that's how you gain trust and then customers and friends for life.
100% agree.
Pete, anything else?
No, thank you very much, Alex. Pleasure talking to you. I'm getting to work right after this podcast because I can't help it with the inspiration you've provided.
Well, I appreciate both of you asking me to be out here. And, it's been great watching you guys grow this business. I've seen it for the last, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years since you and Bill and your brother, you guys all started this thing, and it's grown a lot. So you guys have done a fantastic job, and I get all your emails and great updates. And if anybody's looking to refi or get a new house, I think they ought to call Pinnacle.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Mortgage and Real Estate Podcast by Pinnacle. I'm Chris Giannino. We'll talk to you guys next time.